We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
So happy to have here today Andrew Zuckerman from Lawrence Township Public Schools, as well as James Piercy from Harling Consolidated Independent School District. And I think the exciting thing is New Jersey and Texas are clearly very different as far as locale. And to hear the two different perspectives from IT directors and how they've made shifts to positively impact student learning experiences. We would encourage you today to put questions and comments in the chat. I do have some colleagues here and we'll support that. We'll hold the question and answer session until the end, but we do want to address your issues and be able to share with you all of that. All the resources from today will be in the community that's at the bottom of the link, and the EdWeb team will share that as well. So we'll have some quick introductions about CETA and our work, an overview of the Broadband Imperative 2, and then we will have two district perspectives here, as I just mentioned, as well as a question and answer session. And we would like to thank the education side of AT&T for their support of this webinar today. And you can learn more about AT&T's education initiatives at att.com/edu. So a little bit about CETA. We are a 15-year-old nonprofit. We serve and support digital learning leaders at the state level. So our members are state departments of education. We also have affiliate members of regional networks, as well as associations that work within states or regions of the country. Our job is to increase the capacity of state and national leaders to improve education through technology, policy, and practice. So having said that, we really work on developing tools and resources that can support state leaders who then in turn leverage those resources to support their districts and schools. We have opportunities for advocacy. We provide professional learning opportunities for state leaders. Often they're the ones providing the professional learning within their state, so we provide opportunities for them. We provide multiple opportunities for states to collaborate with one another. We work directly with the private sector, and we also help to inform state and federal relations. CETA has a track record of supporting advocating for digital learning. In advance of this particular work, we published the State K-12 Broadband Leadership Report. In addition, around the broadband topic, in 2015, we published the E-Rate Modernization Toolkit. As E-Rate was modernized, I can't remember the number of pages, but I'll throw out 295 pages of the modernization order. We tried to break that down into much smaller, usable chunks of information. We've also published quite a bit around digital content, including Navigating the Digital Shift, the Guide to Implementing Digital Learning. And most recently, we published the Guide to Quality Instructional Materials as well. So in order for this paper, this new Broadband Imperative 2 to take place, I'll just share a little bit about the fact that CETA in 2012 published the Broadband Imperative. And this was one of the first times that specific capacity targets were published for states, schools, and districts to support broadband implementation. And at our in-person meeting in 2015, our members said, hey, the Broadband Imperative is now, you know, 3 to 4 years old. Our outlying targets are the 2017-18 school year. We should really start looking at what to do about new targets. And so really over the course of 9 months, we worked together to gather data, to research with both public and private sector, state network leaders, regional network leaders, to look at, you know, what have trends, how have things changed, how have they stayed the same since 2012, how can we update this work and work together. So we did quite a bit of research and drafting, we connected with one another, then we invited folks from the external community, so other educational technology groups interested in the same topic to review the paper itself. So it truly was a collaborative effort among the community to publish this new work. Because of the amount of information we gathered, we decided to split the work into two. So we first published the state K-12 broadband leadership paper in the spring of 2016. And that work itself was to show what are states doing? How are they showing state leadership? What are state policies around broadband implementation? How does the funding roll out? What can state leaders do to support their schools and districts? And that was kind of the precursor to the broadband imperative too. I will say, and I think James and Andrew both mentioned this, the most important thing for all of our members, from the techiest folks that we work with that talk a lot of boxes and wires, the number one thing that they're focused on is student learning experiences. So many of us have seen the shift in learning models where there are more personalized, deeper learning experiences that technology can provide more opportunities for, whether it's access to courses that are not available on campus or access to researchers that and content that isn't available locally, as well as hands-on learning tools and engaging online tools that provide more authentic experiences for students. And so we really drove this work with learning and the end user in mind and tried to focus on the importance of that. The paper itself does have quite a few examples, and there's a short 3-page trifold. So for those of you that don't want to read 47 pages, you can get the highlights and download them off of our website. But we also have some great scenarios of true things happening within schools around the country. And we always like to lead with the learning, as we say. So within this work, we have four recommendations. The first is about increasing infrastructure to support student learning. And with that, we give specific targets to internet service provider recommendations. The targets are listed here. I will say that a big shift from the 2012 report itself was providing the opportunity for small, medium, and large districts, as because districts of different sizes do have different needs. And we also set a minimum floor. So for extremely rural schools, which some of you on the line today may be, those need some minimum level beyond our per user recommendations. The second part of recommendation one is the WAN recommendations. So this is the internet via the district aggregation point. And these targets actually remain the same. The original targets from 2012 for 2017-18 are 10 gigs per thousand users, and those we kept flatlined for 2021. The reason for that is so much is moving to the cloud that it seemed to make sense. You may ask, why did we choose to go out only to 2021 school year? This was multiple conversations about how far out our recommendations should go. And I will say that the group felt most comfortable within this range because we're unsure, right? We're unsure of changes in technologies and needs that may impact the future. Then recommendation two, which is really what both the gentlemen will be highlighting about today, is the need to design infrastructure to meet capacity targets, but designing flexible district networks. So thinking about future capacity, considering providers as related to privacy and security options, how to best purchase internet service. And then also first included here is the whole idea of Wi-Fi. In 2012, we really didn't focus on Wi-Fi implementation, but the need for access throughout campuses as people are shifting their learning models or also shifting learning spaces, which may not be confined to a particular classroom. And so we're excited to hear more in a few minutes about how these two districts have approached the need for capacity, high-speed capacity and seamless capacity, and how they're planning for their future so they're not kind of caught off guard as things move and change. Then the ever famous homework gap is another issue that is core. It was a recommendation part of 2012 as well. The fact that we need to ensure equity of access for students outside of school. We don't have specific recommendations in the paper about this. We have resources available. So the need for schools and districts to deliver outreach to families so they understand the importance of access and opportunities to leverage that access. There are so many community partnerships available for access. And there are also out-of-school options, including those within the community, as such as libraries and community centers. So there is no specific number or recommendation for schools, districts, and states, just the fact that everyone needs to show leadership so that families and students are aware of their options to obtain that access outside of the school day. And then finally, recommendation four is leveraging state resources. As a state organization, and with the impact of our state leadership report, we wanted to encourage all states, whether or not local control, because most are local control, to provide leadership at the state level, whether it's direct funding for the E-rate match, state policies to support deployment adoption, also providing innovative purchasing options for increasing buying power. There are many things states can do regardless of their budgets or their policy restrictions to provide leadership and support schools and districts. So having shared all of that, and as I said, there is the full report available online as well as a short overview document. I'd love for you to hear more now and really dig into where these things are happening. So Andrew Zuckerman is a friend of CETA's. He actually participated in our Capitol Hill release of the 2012 paper. So I'm actually excited myself to hear about how things have moved forward in Lawrence Township Public Schools. As he mentioned briefly, as right before we got started, he has worked both in the elementary and middle school in the classroom, as well as an administrator. And under his leadership, their district has gone to a one-to-one program. They have also increased their broadband capacity. And he is now within this position as Director of Instructional Services for the last 5 years. So I'm going to close out my camera and turn off my mic and let you hear about Lawrence Township Public Schools.
Thank you very much, Christine. Certainly looking forward to sharing some of the experiences that we've had in our district. First, I just want to share a little bit about our background about Lawrence Township. We're located in central New Jersey. We have just over 4,000 students and 7 schools. Within that, we have an unusual configuration of four pre-K to 3 buildings. Then we have an intermediate school, which works with students in grades 4 through 6. Our middle school is grades 7 and 8, and then we have a traditional high school of 9 through 12. Within that, we have a very cultural and socioeconomically diverse district. We have over 40 languages spoken within our district, and at the same time, we border Trenton, which is a very urban area, and Princeton, which is a very affluent area. So we have students that are homeless, all the way to students that are living in multi-million-dollar homes, and then they all come together in what we like to call the melting pot of our school district. We're currently in our second strategic plan. The first strategic plan, and the reason why I mentioned it, it had a separate goal for technology integration. And that was probably right around the time that the first broadband paper came out, around 2012, that we were in the midst of that. And in that strategic plan, it had the plan to lay our own fiber between our school district, between our 7 schools, and I'm going to get to that just very shortly. But what quickly became apparent is that rather than having a separate goal for technology in our strategic plan, it needed to be integrated, as we all know very well. That the only way that we're going to truly make this work and to be able to properly provide the instruction and the integration of technology, if it's integrated in everything that we do. We are very fortunate in our district to be able to work with a Board of Education and that it is extremely supportive of what we need to do to help our students to become ready for the and integrated in the technology world of the 21st century. Our district, just a little bit of history with the technology integration. Our district provided our teachers with laptops in 1998. At that time, it seems like a lifetime ago, almost 20 years ago now. And the staff has been working to integrate the use of technology since. We began our one-to-one program in 2011 with a federal grant, which the objective of the grant was to have the students become technologically literate by the end of 8th grade. Clearly, that was just the start. Since then, we've continued to build our one-to-one program to the point in 2015 where it expands to grades 6 through 12, and we've done that with our district budget itself. As I mentioned before, in our first strategic plan, we had the goal to be able to lay our own fiber optic network between our schools, and we've successfully done that to 6 or 7 schools. The one school we're not able to because of logistics that we're not able to lay the fiber to there, but this has significantly increased the capabilities of what our teachers and students are able to do within the classroom. So the only limitations that we have right now on our internet and our network is the limitations that are provided that come from the provider, not from our system. Our teachers continue to do what they need to do. Our students continue to do what they need to do in the classroom. The one thing that we're still working on is trying to perfect the ways that we can provide accessibility to all students. With our socioeconomic diversity that we have in our district, we found that the one-to-one program was a way that we can level the playing field and provide all students with a device so they can further their understanding of the content on their own and also in the classroom. But not all of our students have that internet accessibility at home. We have tried some different pilots on ways to get around that. We've provided students with a 4G device that they can take home to be able to work on a project. At the same time, we have been working with the internet providers to be able to provide the internet accessibility at home on a more affordable rate, and that's through the Internet Essentials program. Before we had the fiber, as many of you may experience from time to time in your districts, is that there was a lot of frustration. There was loss of instruction time. Teachers would have something planned. It would all of a sudden go down because the internet would be down in that building. And it prevented the students from becoming familiar with the skills that they need to be successful in today's society. We all are very well aware that when the students leave our classrooms and even in every day in the classrooms, that technology is a part of their everyday lives. From my 3 children that I have at home, it's providing that balance of how much screen time is too much screen time. And that's something that we certainly are very, very well aware of, and we work with our families on as well. This is I love this infographic, and I always look to get them updated whenever I can. This is from 2016, and this goes back to knowing that our students live and die with their devices. A couple of these that really stand out to me is that there are over 44 million text messages are processed in 60 seconds. More than 300 hours of videos are uploaded to YouTube in 60 seconds. And 56,000 photos are uploaded to Instagram in 60 seconds. As a school district, that, and I'm sure James will expand on this further, is that we can't do our job and not properly integrate technology. This is some statistics from We Are Teachers in 2016, is that there are 27% of the tech directors are looking to implement a BYOD. When we were first looking to start our one-to-one program, we were trying to determine what device is most appropriate for us. Was it a consumption device? Was it a processing device? So we started with netbooks and have since moved to Chromebooks because we feel that's the best for that. Fits the needs of our district. While the infographic demonstrated on the previous slide is that we have to be able to provide the devices that are going to be able to meet the needs of our district. Letting the needs drive it allow us to use those the funds in the most appropriate way. The one thing that our fiber project has done is freed up other resources that we've had, so we were able to continue to expand the one-to-one program. This is another infographic from Chris Helvin in 2014, but I think it's still very much appropriate, and I refer to this on a regular basis, that whatever technology that we're doing, and I'm going to get into some examples of how we're able to do that in the classroom, for 21st century learners, they have to be able to conduct, curate, and connect in almost everything that they're doing. And that's regardless of the devices that they're doing. it also allows them to collect the information, to create, and to be able to work at a higher level, working on building those 21st century skills. Some examples of how our district is allowing our broadband to be able to further connect the students globally is that we have one of our elementary schools has a sister school in Taiwan. The students speak and they collaborate with their sister school in Taiwan at least 4 times a year. It's a great way to be able to that our students are able to explain to them about our culture, and also we learn about their culture, and both schools work to integrate what they're from their sister schools in their classroom. We also have a number of our teachers conducting self-organized learning experiences in the classroom. And one of my favorite examples of this is one of our fifth grade classes. Our teacher put up a picture of the Roman Colosseum. He said, "What is it? Why is it damaged? And why don't they fix it?" It was up to our students to be able to research. Their students researched about the Roman Colosseum. They learned about it. First, they had to find out what it was if they didn't already know about it. And then the students have to give a presentation on this. This type of project is done from our elementary schools all the way up even into some of our in our high school classes. One of the most interesting things is that when the students conducted their presentations, the teacher was tweeting about it through his classroom Twitter account, and they had responses that were provided to them from a class that was on a field trip in the Colosseum itself. The teachers exchanged information, and the schools ended up Skyping back and forth from one another. Without the proper broadband, then our teachers wouldn't be able to do this. Our teachers continue to push our district to be able to make sure that we're meeting the needs of our students and our classes. The next slide provides an example of when one of our classes was reading a book, and they contacted the author. They ended up Skyping with the author to be able to answer the questions directly from the students. On the right side of the screen, it's when one of our intermediate school, our 4, 5, and 6 building, they have a group of entrepreneurs that they try to see how they can make money for the school and for their tech club. And that they also Skyped with a business person out in the community to be able to see how the young entrepreneurs can further what they're doing. This is an example of our intra-district communication. We have, as I mentioned before, we have 4 primary schools, a preschool to 3. And then one of the teachers actually gets the students together through video chats, and then they collaborate with one another to learn what they're doing in the classroom. This happens to be when they were learning about the environment and about some of the streams behind one of the schools, and to determine what they can do to keep our district and our community resources as vital as possible. So again, they're learning from one another. And lastly, most recently, one of our middle school teachers was able to bring Google Expedition into the classroom through a grant that he received from our education foundation, Lawrence Township Education Foundation, that is. And an example of how this can be used in the classroom is that one of our fifth grade classmates was learning about the Great Wall of China. They then took that to the next level by using Google Expedition to actually see and view the Great Wall of China. As I mentioned before about our socioeconomic diversity that we have, many of our students are never, myself included, never had the opportunity to be able to go to the Great Wall of China. And Google Expedition gave them that opportunity to further the learning that they did in the classroom by seeing it firsthand through this type of technology. This is, again, lastly, with the infographic, we always have to continue to move the students just from recalling information to be able to apply it. This is just as we all know with the 21st century skills. We want those students to be able to analyze, evaluate, and create their own thinking. The technology integration from the classroom technology to the internet accessibility through our fiber project has given our teachers the opportunity to have the world as their oyster, to be able to go where they want, to be able to connect with who they want, to be able to further the learning opportunities for our students. And it continues to amaze me every time that I'm asked to go into a classroom or visiting a classroom to see the gifts that they're able to give our students through their learning. Christine, turning it back to you.
Great. Thank you, Andrew. And I have a quick question before we transition is, are you the only district in New Jersey that's built their own fiber network, or are there others?
I'm not sure how many of us there are out there, but there are a few. Our district, we completed the project in 2013. No, I'm sorry, 2015, we completed the project. And in between 2013, 2015, I think it was 2013 to be exact. And our district, we continue to collaborate with others who want to do that. One of the things that we ran across is that we have a number of state roads and federal roads that intersect our district because of our proximity. The state roads allowed us to be able to go under their roads to be able to run the fiber. However, we ran into a roadblock with the federal road. So then that's why we only have 6 of our 7 schools connected to the network.
Gotcha. Okay. Great. And then I'm going to save my other questions for at the end. So thank you.
Okay.
And we're going to transition now. We have another poll. So I want to thank Andrew, and he's going to hold on so that he can answer questions at the end. I'm going to have some dialogue with James as well. So right now, though, we're going to have a quick poll just to hear more about how the level of access in your schools and districts are. So, and for those of you that are on the phone only, I'll just share that the question is, what percentage of schools in your district have seamless, robust broadband access for dynamic digital learning experiences? And so you can choose one topic or one choice and then click submit. And we'll give it just another minute or so as people are logging in. And I'd like to get at least, I don't know, maybe closer to 50% of the participants. So if you're on the app or in a mobile device, you won't see, but it looks like here so far with about 40 votes out of our participants, we have the close to majority saying that 75 to 100% of the schools have seamless, robust access. But then on the flip side, if you add up the bottom two from 10 to 49%, you know, we're at about 37%. So it's definitely a mixed group here on where there is seamless access to broadband. And we hope that those numbers change over time as you learn from one another and you also are able to build out and make this a priority within your schools and districts. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over and invite James Piercy to join us with his mic and camera. And those of you who are on early heard that he started his career in the classroom. He's walked the walk, as Andrew has as well, and then shifted to being an administrator and then the director of technology. And with his current position since 2005, his job really has been to improve bandwidth structure, infrastructure in their schools, and they are making that happen. So we, without further ado, because you can read this whole bio on your own, I want to turn it over to James and let him share about the teaching and learning experiences and how they've changed and grown over time because of this access and availability, similar to the example we just had in New Jersey. So there you go, James.
Thank you very much, Christine. I appreciate that. Andrew, thank you for sharing too. Those are some very exciting activities going on in your district. I'm really excited to see that. On behalf of our superintendent, Dr. Arturo Cavazos, and myself, James Piercy, I'd like to welcome everybody from Harlingen, sunny Harlingen, Texas. And one of the things I wanted to start off with is while not everybody is from the United States, I think it's interesting to know what our location is, because many people confuse our location, our name Harlingen, with Arlington, Texas. And Arlington is a suburb of Dallas. And so it's just a little bit of ways further south. You can see down nearby Mexico. We're about 10 hours south of Dallas as you drive. So, but we're down here. One of the things, we're about 40 miles away from South Padre Island, which is a major, or the Texas spring break capital. So many of your college, former high school students and college students may be down here for spring break this week from the rest of the country. We're 30 miles from Brownsville, and as the crow flies, we're about 15 miles from Mexico. And I think that location is important because it kind of helps to explain some of our district statistics that you can see in this slide. We are a large district. Our total enrollment is about 18,700 students. We've got about 2,500 staff in the district as well. So a little over 20,000 people relying on our network. Our ethnicity distribution is a little different than what Andrew described. We are primarily Hispanic, and that, again, is due to our location. So 93% Hispanic here in our district, 6% white with 1% African-American or Asian. So we have a very almost homogeneous district, but the needs are very real down here. Our economically disadvantaged, rate is 77% across the district. And that has led to an E-rate discount, an average, and this is a district average, is 85%. So we were one of the higher E-rate discount percentages that's been available for us. And we really have enjoyed leveraging that to help improve our network to meet the needs of our students and transform our learning environment for our students. Our student technology environment, I wanted to take a minute to talk about that a little bit because this is one of the planning tools that we use. And as Andrew described, they chose to be a one-to-one district. And I'll talk a little bit about where we're at right now. But we were trying to make that decision between one-to-one or BYOD back in about 2011, the 2011-2012 school year. And we started doing technology surveys as a tool. And I would have told you before the survey that I would, given our area, high economically disadvantaged, that we had probably 50% or less of our students had a device or had connectivity at home. Well, I was wrong. And it had a very strong bearing on some of our decisions that we made. So this planning tool is very important. We found that 85% of our students actually had a mobile technology device that they could bring to school. Now, we were a little liberal with that definition, and phones were by far and away, smartphones and mobile phones were by far and away the device that they had that they could rely on. But even as far down as third grade, and we did the poll from third grade to 11th grade, even as far down in the elementary, we had numbers as high as 70 to 75% of students had a device they could bring to school, a phone they could bring to school that was internet connected. We also found, and this has kind of increased over time, we started out in the first year we did the survey at about 80%. We found that it's gotten up to about 85% of students actually say they have internet connectivity at home. Surprises. Most of that, again, was from the phone, but a lot of those phones had hotspot capabilities so that they could create a hotspot for devices at home, other devices at home as well. We found that one of the reasons that led to the surprising result was probably that we do have a lot of low-cost cell providers down here, and so that has helped out in our area as well. But that is a great planning tool because, as we were talking about today, planning is very important. And so we use that tool to help us make some of our decisions. I wanted to, though, I know that you hear a lot about, you just saw our district statistics, you saw a little bit about how we look on paper, but it's always good to be able to kind of put a face with a name, so to speak. So we're very proud of all of the things that we've put together, and we've been able to programs and all of our facilities here at our district, and we've been able to provide to our community. So I wanted to just take a minute and show a short promo video that we made that shows some of the programs that are happening as a result of our technology connectivity. So I'm going to ask the EdWeb team to go ahead and kick that video off.
The dream starts here. A spark in the mind's eye. A limitless future. A valley that can overcome any mountain. At HCISD, we have a mission to provide educational excellence for all students, to cultivate readiness for college and career, to provide students with the choices for a meaningful and successful life. We don't accept limitations. We aspire to reach for excellence. With the drive to unleash the fierce power of imagination. To leave no amount of greatness untapped. Engaging the mind in a relentless pursuit of what's ahead.
With the technology essential to realize the vision, we make no small plans. Our teachers are mentors, guides, adventurers, and explorers, seeking to ignite the passion within their students. Ingenuity, creativity, inspiration. We hire the best. We keep the best. We sculpt the next generation. We are architects of the future. Our roots run as deep as this valley and as swift as the Rio Grande. With more than a century in service to our community.
We are Harlingen!
Children become students. Students become scholars. Scholars become leaders. Forging the partnerships that are the bedrock of success. Brick by brick, inch by inch. Our standards don't stand. They elevate, ever upward, for success is never stationary. Facing forward with an eye firmly fixed on the job at hand. Drive and determination in our hearts and minds. We don't back down from a challenge, we lean into it. And when we do, our students will be poised to change the world. Inside our halls and beyond our walls, the future comes into focus and the path becomes clear. Fusing academics, arts, and athletics into a transformative learning environment where creativity, collaboration, critical thinking, and communication lay the cornerstones of success. The dream starts here. We reach, we aspire, we dare to be. We are HCISD.
So while we're waiting for the EdWeb team to bring the slide deck back up, I want to just say that some of those programs and those innovative activities that you see going on in that promo video all happen because of planning. And that's what one of the things from topics we're here to talk about today is planning. And we use many different tools. And Andrew talked about their strategic plan. We use many tools like surveys, our state long-range plan, needs assessments, community input, focus groups to try to develop where we were going. In 2013, our very innovative superintendent, Dr. Arturo Cavazos, began developing our first district strategic plan. And it covered many facets. But digital learning was a major, major goal. The whole plan focused on transforming our students' educational environment, with digital learning being a cornerstone. And the strategic plan has a couple of areas currently that we focus on. So digital learning is kind of focused in specific result 1.3 and 3.6 at the bottom of the page there. And also we have support for that is in specific result 3.5 and developing an instructional technology support team to support the curriculum, as well as not only expanding the network and making sure that we have the resources available for our teachers and our students to use. We also look to the state of Texas as one of the other tools we mentioned, and they've provided a long range tech plan as well for us to look at. And one of the current activities and initiatives that they're rolling out right now is our connectivity plan called the Texas Classroom Connectivity Initiative. And as Christine mentioned earlier, you know, as some of those recommendations that CETA has made, we see happening here with the state of Texas, the Classroom Connectivity Initiative. It's a collaboration between the governor's office and Texas Education Agency, and it's exploring one of the goals that it has as an early goal is to explore setting up state matching funding for schools that seek E-rate for special fiber construction costs. So adding that fiber connectivity between campuses and the district core is something that the state's looking to help us out with. Expanding the use of Wi-Fi in classrooms was another major goal that they had, and as well as increasing access to broadband networking. And just like CETA has in their reports put out numbers and goals to reach, the state has also established some of these connectivity goals. And you can see what they are there by This year, they're recommending we have 100 meg per 1,000 student staff. Next year, a gig per 1,000 student staff. So the state is trying to push and give us targets to shoot for as well. So as we've looked at those different planning pieces, I mentioned earlier that we had begun work even before the strategic plan on trying to decide about whether we were going to go one-to-one or BYOD. The district chose, because of all those planning tools that we put in place and resources that we had to look at, to choose to be a high access or have a high access BYOD program, bring your own device program. And we put high access in front because even though we know 85, or we heard in our survey, 85% of our students had a device that they could rely on, not everybody had a device. So we knew we still had to provide access in the form of whether it be district-owned devices or other resources that we could provide, other extended library hours for students to come in and spend time in the school building, having access to the network to complete work outside of the regular school day. All those ideas we tried to embody. But the main core of our district was to go with the BYOD program. And our superintendent likes to talk about responsible rollout. So we developed a three-year plan, and you may not be able to read all of the details here, but we did start at the high schools, went through the middles and the elementary, and we had some different activities and ways that we spelled that out and how that was rolled out to our campuses, as well as at the bottom, kind of having some common terminology. We felt that that was important too as a part of our rollout plan. But on the back of this, and what you don't see in this, this was our curriculum level or our campus plan to look at. But behind this, the technology plan also, we identified the fact that there are many links in the network chain. And you'll hear me talk about the network as links in a chain very often. But one of the major links that this high access BYOD program brought up that needed to be addressed was our Wi-Fi access at the campuses. So we had in the background happening simultaneously with this rollout of the BYOD program, a rollout of Wi-Fi upgrades at the campuses. And this is just a little bit about how we did that. Prior to the BYOD rollout, we did have Wi-Fi access, but it was only about one access point per four classrooms. It was an older Cisco controller-based Wi-Fi system. So as we rolled out the BYOD program, we upgraded this, and the main tenet of that upgrade program was to get us to one access point in every classroom. We went with a newer Merakia cloud-based controller Wi-Fi system that gave us better controls and was much better or much easier to manage. So we can be more responsive to the needs of our campuses as they come up educationally or curriculum-wise. We also put in multiple access points in public areas like offices, cafeterias, gyms, et cetera, to make sure we have coverage during large group sessions or large group events that were happening. Now, on our high schools, we funded that because it was an immediate need, came up very quickly, and we couldn't wait for E-rate timelines. We funded that through a local tax ratification election. So that was one of the things we had to explore alternative funding for that. But we did use the middle and elementary schools, we did use E-rate funds to update those campuses and their Wi-Fi infrastructure. But as I talked about, as I mentioned before, there are many links in the network chain. We identified as we updated our Wi-Fi, or as we made the BYOD plan and updated our Wi-Fi, that there were several links that we were still gonna have to address, and we prioritized those. And that district level network infrastructure was the next piece that we needed to update. We had a basic, and these are some technology specific for some of the tech directors, I realize, but I'll kind of wrap it up and bring the point down to why I put this in here. We have a basic hub and spoke design. We do have currently four separate ISPs that provide a total of 5 gig. For the district, and that's manually aggregated via IP routes. We have port-based Cisco firewalls that have a capability of 10 gig. Our Cisco ASR router that provides high availability has 40 gig, and it's scalable, easily upgradable. Our Lightspeed content filter, we found that as a bottleneck in the network as well. We had to upgrade that, and it currently is at a 10 gig throughput, and it is scalable. That means it's easily upgraded. And then our connections from every campus back to our core. I like to look back at where we were, as Christine mentioned, in 2005 when I took the position. We ran this whole school district of almost 20,000 students and staff on 6 megabits internet access. That was all we had through a bundle of T1s connected, copper connections. And each campus only had a single T1 for connectivity. That was 1.5 megabits. Houses now get 25 and 50 megabits for $25, $30 now. So you can see where we've come from. We knew immediately that we had to go to fiber optic infrastructure and really increase that. So that's one of the things we did. We started out with an AT&T product. We leased the WAN connections, and they were Optiman and GigaMan product, and they were point to point. But we've recently converted our fiber optic infrastructure now to their ASE product, which is a point to multipoint. And we start out with 100 megs to every campus and a gig to every 100 megs to every elementary campus and a gig to all the secondary campuses. But we're planning to increase very soon because of the demand that we have to meet to a gig at the elementary schools and 5 gigs to the secondary schools. And the reason I have a lot of this technical information there is just to know that as you design your network, you need to choose products, choose tools that are expandable, easily upgradable. They're flexible and they are scalable so that you can upgrade them because the demand is ever growing. So that's the reason for this slide. And some of the technical information may be a little more than some bargained for, but that's what I wanted to focus on there with it. We need to make networks that are flexible and that are responsive to our instructional demands and meet the goals that we have set before us by CETA, by your individual states or organizations that your education agencies are part of. And what that does, being flexible, being responsive to the educational needs, allows us to provide support for many different innovative programs and grants. And these are just some of the, and not an all-exclusive list at all here in the district, but some of the programs that we've been able to take part in. The BYOD has been, again, the core of our teachers' instructional environment and the transformation of our classrooms. But we've had programs like our Digital Leader and Digital Classroom Initiative, where we allow teachers to apply for an annual cadre. We choose 25 to 30 teachers a year. And these teachers, if they're successful in their application, they receive a technology package for the teacher and also a classroom set of 10 to 15 iPads for shared student use in their classroom. Again, providing that high access to supplement our BYOD program. We've done that for about 4 years now. It's been a very successful program that provides professional development and tools, resources to use those tools that they're given throughout their year of implementation. And then we're awarded recently, very proud to say that we received the Apple Connect Ed grant at one of our elementaries, Savala Elementary. And this was an elementary that was 96% economically disadvantaged. And we were able to apply for, and we're fortunate enough to receive this grant from Apple in combination with the Connect Ed initiative from the federal government. And it provides basically a one-to-one iPad program for the whole campus, pre-kindergarten through fifth grade. And the teachers have gotten very immersive staff development from Apple. It was not just a device program. It came with staff development. It came with network upgrades. It was a very, very all-inclusive program and grant. So we're very fortunate to have received that. That's been a great program that our network has made possible. Our robotics programs. We have all of our secondaries, almost all of our secondary schools have robotics clubs that they compete in competitions here and locally and at the state level. And we're even exploring using our computer technicians to help sponsor some of these campus clubs and roll it down into our elementaries. I think we already have 6 out of 17 elementaries participating in our robotics program. And we talked a little bit about providing access outside of the school. We were fortunate enough to receive the Technology Lending Program grant from the state of Texas. And that allowed us to put mobile Wi-Fi hotspots into targeted high school classrooms. Currently, we're using the Khajiit hotspots that are available for student checkout. Students can take them home if they don't have internet access at home and complete their homework. To expand that program, we're looking into the Sprint Connect Ed grant, which is, I believe, million connections to home, where they are also going to be providing mobile hotspots available to high-need students so that can be checked out to them so that they can take them home and provide connectivity away from the normal school day. So those are some of our innovative programs and grants. And another way, I think one of the, coming back to our original strategic plan, was talking about how we can support the campuses. And one of the ways we do that is providing an instructional technology team at the campus. And we have focused on developing our librarians and our computer technicians at each campus to support instructional technology for the teachers at those campuses. We meet monthly with this group of people, and they go out and they take the learning back from the district level and take it back to the campus and provide support that way, as well as meeting their everyday needs. We also are transforming our libraries, and I know we've heard many districts that are transforming their libraries to become technology hubs at each campus, but having the technician in on that transformation has really helped here at Harlingen CISD. We've actually even renamed our instructional learning centers libraries to instructional learning centers, or ILCs, and our librarians are renamed to learning media specialists. So transformation is happening on many different levels here at Harlingen CISD, and having that robust network, planning for it, and putting it to bear to be able to provide the resources and the access that our teachers and students need is of vast importance. And I want to thank CETA for their support in doing that and their guidance. And I want to turn it back over to Christine. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, James. And I'd love for you to stay on. And Andrew, if you can join us back on. Great to hear both of you share about leading with the learning. I think, James, as you mentioned, the need for being flexible and designing those networks and working with your partners to help make that happen. At CETA, we've talked about the fact that teachers should be able to go in a classroom, and as similar as they plan to turn on the lights and they know the lights will work, they should have that access regardless of the activity that they're planning. And in both your cases, it sounds like you really pushed yourselves to make sure that the technology is an enhancement of the learning and it is not an inhibitor because of challenges such as access. So I'm going to also, I wanted to follow up. We have a question in the chat for Andrew. Was your district part of the New Jersey Purchasing Consortium?
We are now. However, we were not. We had to wait until our contracts expired because they were in place. We had the multi-year contracts, so we couldn't do it initially. But we are part of that. We are part of that now.
Okay. And for those of you not familiar, that is highlighted in the paper. It's one way that states can show leadership. I think I have a link here I can put up. But New Jersey, because they were not going to have a state network as what we would consider a classic state network, they had districts coordinate and go in with the power of numbers and buying power. And I understand that many districts such as yours either came on later or they leveraged those price options because the districts around them that were part of the purchasing consortium said, hey, I know they're all getting for this price, so you should get a similar pricing.
That's right.
I hear a little bit of feedback. I still hear the feedback. I don't know if it's me or...
I hear it.
Could you mute yourself and just see maybe... okay, whoever muted. It's okay. So I'm going to have you unmute one at a time. That would potentially help. Okay, and then I have a question. There's several questions here, so let me focus on... Okay. One is Andrew in the chat here. Actually, I'll jump to James. How much does your team use the TV Texas VSN? And I'm not familiar with that acronym, so I'm going to let you respond to that.
Texas Virtual Schools Network. We do have some involvement. It's not very prolific at this point. But they are looking at expanding that program, making more course offerings available. And I know that that's something that we have looked at and we are exploring as well to provide that ability for students to work outside of the brick and mortar and be able to meet their needs and graduation needs, whatever that may be, to further their education.
Okay. And just as a follow-up, so is that something that they can do on campus or students access at home or both?
Both. depending on the course, depending on the situation it's being used in. So,
okay.
I know the state is really looking to increase that program.
Gotcha. And then, Andrew, this is a very technical question about your build. So did you lease your fiber? You see it there? Okay.
I do. And it's a great question. We actually did this all on our own through a referendum and through and from the with the support of our township. Actually, and what we did is we actually laid our own fiber. We purchased our own. We hired somebody to dig the trenches, and we actually ran the line from our high school as our main hub at our with our technology center all the way out to the six of our schools, which is where I mentioned before we had to get permission from the state to be able to dig under some of the state roads, and then we ran into a roadblock. One of our schools is past a road that's federally owned, and we did not get permission to go under and to trench under the federal road, which is why we only have it to six of our seven schools.
Gotcha. And then you still are working with the private sector with the purchasing consortium for the services themselves, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me see. I think we'll squeeze in one more before we go over highlights here. Let's see.
While you're looking for a question, I'd also like to mention that I forgot to mention that just this morning I was at a Connect the Region meeting with our Regional Education Service Center, where that Texas State Classroom Connectivity Initiative I was talking about are providing more details, and we are brainstorming as a region to try to see how we can maximize our efficiencies in meeting broadband needs by developing consortiums, whether it be local or working with entities like Education Superhighway, who's working with the state in collaboration with the governor and TEA to get resources to pull together to lay fiber with the new E-rate rule guidelines and changes, being able to add dark fiber as a category one funded event is something that is really kind of a game changer. And a lot of people are starting to look at, see if they can maximize and leverage that.
Yes. And I'm going to let us close out with that. I will say that I think, and you may have already seen this, but this power in these regional consortia in New Jersey is a great example. It's in our paper, and they have a whole work write up about it, and we're happy to connect you with others. So keep us posted on how that is moving forward. So we're just at the top of the hour. So I want to say thank you again to Andrew and James. And I really, I do the back end of this research and reporting, but I really love to hear the impact on students as well and to see the innovation that's happening at the school level. I will say I want to just push to everyone on the call that as our next steps, we look at the need to prepare all students for college and careers. The fact that we should all be advocating, so regardless of the role in your school, and I know there are teachers on here as well, you have the power to lead. You have the power to connect with your administrators and your IT staff to have the learning experiences change and the IT support that as well, to provide those deeper learning experiences. So again, I would like to thank AT&T and their education arm for supporting this webinar and continuing to be a regular supporter of CETA's work.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.